I'm Scott Hansen, host of NFL Red Zone. Lowe's knows Sundays are for football. That's why we're here to help you get your next DIY project done, even when the clock isn't on your side. Whether that's a new Filtrete filter or Bosch and Kobalt power tools, Lowe's has everything you need to feel like the MVP of DIY. So get it done and earn your Sunday. Shop now, in-store, and online. Lowe's, official partner of the NFL.
Hello, friends and family, and thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. I am so happy that you have decided to allow this podcast to be a tiny part of the neural network, which makes up the matrix of consciousness which you exist within. Thank you for letting me live in the valley of your mind as some small little chateau on some distant peak, staring out over a fragrant valley filled with super intelligent blackbirds, all singing to you about what a wonderful and incredible human you are, and how happy they are that you're part of them and that they are part of you. All of us, in fact, are just a bundle of love blackbirds flying through the eternal sky, which is reality. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is partially sponsored by Audible.com. Audible is, as many of you probably know, the number one supplier of audiobooks and something, and I'm addicted to Audible. I listen to Audible podcasts all the time. I'm currently listening to the Dark Tower series. I know I rave about it all the time, but they get really good narrators to read these things, and they're quite entertaining. And you can download a Audible audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/family hour and signing up for a temporary membership. You can cancel if you want to, but they'll give you a free audiobook. And if you've got any brains in your head, and if you've got a human heart beating in that chest and not a withered old black lizard heart filled with green crap blood, then you will download a copy of The Gunslinger, which is the first in the Dark Tower series. I know I'm always talking about this book, but they really are incredible. And there's nothing better as a companion for when you're running on that treadmill and feeling like you're about to have a heart attack and feeling your entire body attempting to shut down just to escape the horror of cardiovascular exercise than the Gunslinger books. They will take you to the 5 mile mark and beyond. So go there and do that. And plus, Audible sends me $15 for every single person who signs up for this thing. So it's a great way for you to support the podcast, and it's a great way for you to support your body as it desperately tries to escape from the entropic state of being in not so great shape and getting ripped and strong and muscular and or whatever it is that you want your body to be, whatever the thing is that you seek to see when you stare into that mirror. So, go to audibletrial.com. And for those of you who took the leap and ordered T-shirts, here's the great news. They're shipping this week. You should have your T-shirt soon. They just came in from Thailand. Praise God. They were safely delivered on a ship that did not have a vampire living in it or some kind of werewolf beast that devoured the crew, as I thought might happen because these shirts are magically imbued. And wherever there's magic, supernatural beings are drawn to it like moths to a flame. The ship was not attacked by aliens. The ship did not go back in time in the Bermuda Triangle. The ship did not end up being devoured by a behemoth or some massive whale being. The ship was not harpooned by Greenpeace. The ship was not engulfed in a ocean cyclone and sucked down into Atlantis where fish creatures devoured the crew and put on my beautiful and wonderful shirts. The ship made it to the sweet, sweet port of Los Angeles, where it made its way to our shipping department and they are now being shipped out. So thank you, all of you who've ordered these awesome fucking shirts. And for those of you who haven't ordered these shirts, what are you waiting for? Don't you want to feel what it's like to wear the skin of an angel? Don't you want to know what it's like to envelop yourself in a rare tropical flower? Haven't you always wondered what would it be like to lay inside a Venus flytrap before the acid started eating me away? Well, that's what these shirts feel like. They're the reason bugs fly into Venus flytraps, and they're the reason that men are from Mars and women are from Venus flytraps. These shirts are, in fact, the point from which all things emerge. Ah, they're just shirts, but they're great, and I hope you order one because they're really cool. The designs are awesome. You can see them at duncantrussell.com. Go to the shop and check out these shirts. Would you please order one? And we're almost out of the posters. In fact, I think we may be completely out. It's something I should check on before I chill them on the podcast, but there might be a few Duncan Trussell Little Hobo Chaos posters where I'm being possessed by my sweet and demonic puppet Little Hobo. We are only printing 666 of them, and I think we're almost out. I know we're almost out. In fact, I'm nervous. I don't know. Go check. There's a chart you can see on the thing. If they're sold out, they're sold out, but I don't think they are. And finally, and most importantly, our number one sponsor for so long, and a wonderful sponsor they are, is Sure Design T-shirts. Sure Design T-shirts. Not Uncertain Design T-shirts. Not I'm not sure if these are T-shirts. Not is it really a T-shirt? Sure Design T-shirts. They're Sure Design T-shirts are our sponsor. They're the same company that prints our beautiful T-shirts. They exist underneath Thailand. There is a Thailand itself is actually the very topmost part of a essentially a kind of alien missile silo that's constructed of a rare form of metal that can only be found in the deep and abandoned stone quarries of Mars, where a very, very long time ago our distant ancestors used to mine this material, which is the same material that causes children to, it's basically when a child dies in its sleep, his soul becomes this material. And listen, there's nothing softer than this stuff. It's the softest thing ever. When a child's soul is different from the soul of other, beings, it's soft, it doesn't activate allergies. It doesn't cause your immune system to react. It's just a soft damn thing. And these shirts are woven from child souls, which have been harvested. Basically, the way it works is Sure Design T-shirts has a team of UFO pilots that anytime a child dies in Thailand, the UFO pilots fly into the sky and basically intercept the Grim Reaper and use tractor beams to suck the child souls from the black oily bag, which he carries them up into heaven or down into hell, depending on the behavior and the physical beauty of the child. These child souls are then taken to the Sure Design centrifuges, where they are basically spun around, and the spinning process turns them into the fabric, which is used to create this beautiful Sure Design shirts, which a lot of you guys have been wearing to the shows. They're incredible. The designs on them are awesome. Where do they get their designs from, you're asking? Well, it's simple. Charles Manson is a bulimic, and there's a prison guard in Manson's prison that has placed a canvas in the toilet where Charles Manson vomits. And his vomit creates these incredible designs. No one knows why, but it creates really beautiful psychedelic designs. So the shirts are made from congealed child souls, which have been run through a metaphysical centrifuge. And the designs are from Charles Manson's vomit. Go to SureDesignT-shirts.com. Order one of these shirts. If you put my name in, when you order them, you get 10% off. They're amazing. Okay? So there are the commercials. Thank you for listening to them. And for those of you who didn't listen to them and skipped ahead, I don't blame you. Yeah, I do blame you. You should have listened to them. The commercials are fun. They're not, I mean, just fucking go back and listen to it, would you? No, don't. Skip ahead. And if it annoyed you, you could have skipped ahead. For those of you who got annoyed by the long commercial, you could have skipped ahead. Just use your mouse and click ahead, you bastards. You sweet, sweet bastards. I want to comb your hair. I want to rub lotion into your bodies. I want to go to the beach with you, and I want to enjoy sunsets with you and sunrises with you. And I would love to make out with a great many of you. I'm sure some of you I wouldn't, but lots of you are beautiful, wonderful beings of light. And thank you for listening to this podcast. And holy God in heaven, is this episode a zinger. I mean, this is incredible. This is a direct result of my friendship with Matt Staggs from Disinformation. Matt Staggs, a few months ago, started telling me about this fella by the name of Connor Habib, who is a really interesting person. He is a spiritualist. He is into Rudolf Steiner. He is a really great writer. And he's also a gay porn star. This podcast is so incredible that rather than do a long and rambling opening monologue, as I so often do, I'm just going to jump right in to the podcast itself. So without further ado, everyone, please welcome writer, lecturer, and gay porn star, the brilliant and hilarious Connor Habib. Connor Habib. Connor Habib. Connor Habib. Hi.
Hello.
Thank you so much. It's cool that to meet you.
Yeah, it's awesome to be here. Thank you.
I've been reading your writing that you sent me, and man, great. You're a great writer. And
thank you.
That's you represent the spectrum. Like, you are the full spectrum of humanity. Because on one side of the thing, we've got a famous gay porn star.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you're a brilliant philosopher and you're a really great writer.
Thank you.
It's all encapsulated in this. It's really a unique incarnation that you have going on here.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear because it's caused me so much like trouble and angst in my life, like having all these contradictions, you know, and now I like it. Like, I went to school and I was studying literature, but I was also studying science. And then I was studying science, but I was also a spiritual person. But I was a spiritual person, but I was also into porn. So, like, and sex. And so, like, that used to be, like, a real pain in the ass. But now it's, like, I see it as, like, well, I get to be the bridge between all those people that think right. those things are contradictory. So it's actually been really, like, a good experience eventually. But you have to redeem it. You know, you have to redeem your contradictions or else it sucks.
What do you mean by that, redeem or contradiction?
Well, you have to, like, understand that they all meet in you. And yeah. so they're integrated. Even if you don't think they are, they're integrated inside of you. So you just go with it, you know?
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people, when they are thinking about getting into a spiritual life or they think about meditating, they
or gay porn, yeah.
Or gay porn. Yeah. Yeah, people who meditate and think about getting into gay porn or people in gay porn who think about getting into meditation, they think it can't work. Somehow there's this, not just gay porn, by the way, but any kind of sexuality that's outside what's considered the norm. People think that you can't have, or some people, I don't, and you don't, and you know, but there is this idea that, like, I guess to put it in perspective, sometimes, and then in a very small way, on Twitter, I'll get messages, if I do, like, a podcast that's, and I'm negative, or if I'm, like, outside, because some people think that this is, like, a spirituality podcast, and sometimes because I rave about positivity, I'll get these tweets, it's like, what, like, if I say something negative, they're like, well, what do we have here? Right. Oh, really? So, Mr. Positivity, blah, blah.
It's all a front, yeah.
Yeah, but to me, I think, well, no, I don't just have to be on this one part of the spectrum of reality, I get to be the entire thing that I want to be. That's part of being a true person.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, those people are like, of course, like, it's so obvious that they're projecting like their negativity onto you the minute they say something like that. It's so ridiculous.
Right. They're like positivity fascists.
Yeah,
or
right, right. Like, how fucking dare you? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They try to enforce this weird code or this weird idea of how everyone's supposed to be.
And of course, that makes you want to be like way more negative, right? Like, the one thing that I hate so much, it's actually just happened to me 2 days ago, was like, I was walking down the street, and people, because I live in a gay area, so people will sometimes recognize me, but, you know, in a straight area, nobody knows. But I'm walking down the street, and some guy recognizes me, and he comes up to me and goes, why aren't you smiling? You know, which pisses you off, like, completely, right? So, like, anybody that's telling you to buck up, like,
Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you forever.
Go fuck yourself.
To the grave, yeah.
Why aren't you smiling?
Yeah,
that's exactly, that's a version, that's on the spectrum of, are you okay?
Right, like, and you're like, well, I have moods, you know, it's not, I'm a human being, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And that's something that, like, that I think that, you know, something that attracts me in the philosophy of Ram Dass, and something that has attracted me to some of Aleister Crowley's philosophies, is that it doesn't just embrace the, you know, shiny, happy side of the spectrum, but it invites you to accept the entirety of the whole thing.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. That's something Osho said, too. He said, I don't teach the middle way, I teach the whole way. And I think that that's like, you have to teach it all, or, I mean, you have to talk about it at least and confront it, or else you're doomed to be a prisoner to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you've sort of, you know, you've gone into a part of the swimming pool that's in the real deep, strange waters.
Yeah.
You know, because there's straight people who like sex, and there's gay people who like sex, and then there's straight people who like sex and figure out a way to turn that into a career or making money off of, you know, doing porn. And that's those waters are really strange waters that people are, that's beyond controversial. And that's something I'm curious to get your perspective on, which is, because I have a few questions about, I guess we could start on the gay porn side of the spectrum and then work our way up to talking about infinity.
Okay.
But, but here's my question. I'm just going to throw out some ideas I have about sex, and then I want to know what you think about it.
Okay.
Number one, I think that when you have sex with someone, you get eternally connected to that person in some small way. There's some kind of super string thing that happens, or some kind of quantum entanglement that happens from having sex with a person. Do you think that do you agree with that idea?
Well, sure, but I don't know. Like, I mean, isn't that true of everything? You know what I mean? It's like the sex. Okay, so it's funny because a lot of questions that come to me that are about sex or about pornography do this like special case sex thing. Like, because it's sex, it's somehow a special case.
Yes.
Now, I do indeed think that sex is different than a lot of other aspects of being a human being, right? But it's like, sorry to go off topic a little bit, but this will help explain. It's like when people are like, well, don't porn studios exploit their workers? And I'm like, yeah, don't banks exploit their workers? Like, what are you talking about? But your resistance to it is tied up into all the stuff that you think and feel and have been taught about sex and sexuality. So it's so much more awful to you. But, you know, for someone who's in it and who has sort of released all that shit, it's like, yeah, this is just like any other job. Like, I experience terrible managers and awful people who, you know, want me to do all kinds of things I don't necessarily want to do. So it's sort of the same thing. Like, yeah, I feel like, yes, we connect ourselves with people through sex in a certain way. On the other hand, it's like, if we're not aware of how we connect ourselves to people in any other way, how special is it, you know, via sex too?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a some kind of flashbulb effect with sex. You know, I mean, it's a heightened level of experience.
Yeah.
So you're every day. I'm sure. Yeah, you're definitely we are reality, right? That's the idea. We're a singularity that's differentiated itself. We're connected to everything, but certain aspects, certain things that rise up in the field of phenomena are brighter, or, you know, imprint themselves on our neurons more than other things, which is why. Right. I think there's sex magic, you know, the idea that via orgasm and focusing your will, you can sort of get yourself closer to certain goals.
Right. But I think that sex magic stuff, too, a lot of it just is dependent on the fact that people can't clear their minds or enter that state without sex. So,
right.
Like, they do it with sex because it's the one place where they totally, when they're coming, I mean, and it's also, like, really, like, male-centered, because who knows? I don't know what a woman experiences during an orgasm. I assume most men don't. But
women have orgasms?
Yeah, I've heard of it, you know, at least. It's some mystical thing, right?
Huh.
But not in my book, they don't.
Not in my America!
But, no, it's like, you know, so much is, like, chattering and, like, going on in your ego and all that kind of stuff. So when you come, it, like, you enter into this like hyper space, and people can do that. I think people can do that through meditation or
sure.
through entering. So it's like sex is a door for people that aren't able to get into that space without it, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So there's, okay. All right. That's cool. That makes sense to me. I think it's a little, my idea of this quantum entanglement thing, I have often thought, that's so stupid and superstitious. What's wrong with you?
Like, what do you mean? What idea of your quantum?
The idea that, like, cause I have this idea that, like, you know, when you have sex with someone, you end up linking yourself. It's something I thought of when I was on acid in high school. So,
yeah.
And it hasn't really left my mind since then, but it's like, there's something happening. I mean, you know, like, maybe it's just like people you have an emotional connection with, but don't you think that, you know, like when you have a lover, I feel like I can tell what's going on with them even when I'm not with them. Like I can feel these little trembles in a telepathic way. You know, I've had dreams. I remember I had a dream once about this girl that I was actually engaged to. And I had this dream, and in the dream, it was a really serious dream, and she was telling me, I'm, because we'd broken up. She's like, I just wanted you to know I'm getting married. The next day she calls me and to tell me she's pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what the fuck? I just dreamed that you sort of told me the night. So I feel like there is this special thing that happens when you connect with someone at that level. And maybe it's not just the sexual level.
Right.
Maybe it's like you have to be in love or something.
I think it's all sorts of levels. But I do think, and people don't like to talk about this, but I do think there might be some essential differences between men and women coming together and men and other men. I mean, certainly, like, if you look at Taoist sexual philosophy, like,
yeah.
that's what they say, too. But I think...
what do they say?
Well, you know, like that when men have sex with each other, the sexual appetite actually increases instead of decreases.
Huh.
It doesn't level out. And that seems to me to be true. I mean, I'm going to get shit for this, but I mean, gay men are more promiscuous than straight men. And
right.
we have sex with each other a lot more. So that alone, the fact that we do it more, allows us to think about it and feel about it differently. So it allows us to have a different kind of relationship to it. So I'm not sure, like, what happens with a guy and a girl, really, you know?
Well, the thing, that idea of gay men being more promiscuous, it's like... There, maybe I'm going to get shit for this, but it does seem that men are more sexually charged in
yeah.
certain ways than women. And maybe that's a cultural thing. I actually have a guest coming on, the author of this book, Sex at Dawn, who says that we're all super fucking horny and just women have been so conditioned to feel guilty about it that they've suppressed it to this like intense level. But if women were as horny as men, I mean, I read your incredible article about having sex at rest stops.
Uh-huh.
and you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is like, man, if only women would go to rest stops to fuck men. Because if that would happen, I would only be at a rest stop. I would find a, I'd find an apartment next to a rest
right,
stop.
Yeah.
Rest stops would be the like Disneyland. They would just be swarming with humans.
It's amazing. Actually, there is this, where I went to school at UMass, there was a glory hole in one of the bathrooms in one of the buildings there. And it was like a bathhouse, right? And I used to go there all the time between classes.
Yeah.
And like, the...
Wait, you would go to the glory hole and have sex between classes?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, I would get my dick sucked between classes through the
glory hole. It's so convenient.
Yeah, it was amazing, right? And I remember telling my friend about it, and she was like, what? And I was like, well, you know, she was really shocked.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, you know, I mean, wouldn't you do it? And she's like, no, I'm not saying what. She's like, you're stupid if you don't do it, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I remember thinking, like, yeah, you really, you know, if you have this opportunity. But, you know, like... But
with a glory hole. Let's talk glory holes.
Okay.
Because this
was inevitable.
Yeah, it was.
Since you're standing behind a glory hole now as we do this.
Where?
No, I mean...
Well, there's a glory hole.
I just want you to know all I'm looking at right now is Duncan's separated dick coming through a hole, and his voice is coming from behind a stall.
Don't
wall.
Give away the secret of how we do this podcast.
Oh, God. Okay.
You just ruined the whole thing. No one knows that.
Now you know what all his guests have to go through.
Go through? They like it. It's otherwise it wouldn't be a glory hole. It'd just be a sad hole.
Yeah.
Are there sad holes? There are sad holes,
yeah,
right?
Probably, like at mental hospitals.
Oh,
yeah.
Those are sad
They're
holes.
They're really depressing.
Now, the thing with a glory hole is, with the problems happening in the world right now with bath salts.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a little
afraid someone's going to eat my dick.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be an experience, right?
No, it would be a nightmare. That's the problem. I mean, yeah. when you're talking about a lot of trust. This is like glory holes are the trust fall of sex.
Isn't that kind of cool though? Like that when you say that, I'm like, because people have said that to me before. Like, you don't know who's on the other side. You don't,
vampire,
you know,
it could
be
lion.
It could be John Wayne Gacy.
Could
you
be
know
a gorilla.
What I mean? Like, who fucking knows? But right, it could be a gay gorilla who came to a bathroom, who is in search of hot dick.
She's
yeah.
hungry.
Yeah. That's gross.
Yeah.
If it's a woman, I wouldn't do it.
Ah.
It's a female hungry gorilla who wants to eat my dick.
Now, can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Before you go into your point.
Yeah.
If you're at a glory hole and you know that there's a woman on the other side.
Yeah. Would I do it?
Does it turn you on as much as if it's a man?
Huh. I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to be in that situation.
These are tests scientists should be doing.
I know. I think so, too. They should be hooking people up to, like, electrodes and doing it. Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I'm going to take a pass on that one.
Okay.
And jump onto... I don't know. There's something really cool about that trust, though. Like, there's something cool about, like, that sex. And that's something I think about a lot, that our bodies make us trust each other. And they bring something out in us that's kind of amazing. Okay, they totally fuck us over, too, in so many ways. Right? But there is also this thing that's like, if I want sex and I go to this place, like, I pretty much know the guy's not going to bite my dick off. Okay, maybe once in a while. But there's... You
only get once.
Yeah, right. Well, you get it so back on and go back again. Like if you're a real trooper, you know. I wrote about that in the rest area thing too. It's like people go to rest areas and have sex because there's this thing where you don't have to be. You don't have to have an identity.
Right.
You don't have to like live all the shitty stuff that you're living in your life. You just go somewhere and you meet and you have sex. And so even if all these other things surrounding it are dishonest, there's this honest moment in having sex, I think.
Right.
So so maybe there is an essential connection in that sense too, and I'm missing out on that. But I wouldn't worry about somebody biting my dick off in a glory hole. No.
Yeah, I mean you could. I mean it would ruin the fun of the thing if that's like what's on your mind. That
probably
sucks. Yeah. That just sucks.
Yeah.
But that thing you're talking about is something that I think the most important point here is that idea of stripping away the ego, stripping away the identity, and that pure moment that happens not just through sex, it happens through, you know, high doses of psychedelics that can happen. And it can also happen when it seems like kids and animals, they have an established or crystallized their identity so much, so they're just existing at a more pure state. And I think that's the orgasm's fucking great. But it seems like what really is what to me what I like about sex is not so much the orgasming part, even though that's fantastic, but that moment where you really merge, that moment where there's something kicks in, and you're no longer thinking about right. how you look or what is you're in this unitive moment that can happen in really good sex.
Yeah, you know what I think is beautiful? Actually, the thing that does that gets the short shrift or people don't think about that often is conversation. Where, like, you know, it's totally free form. And when you're having a real conversation, it's amazing. Yeah. Like, you just sink into it and you're, like, batting these ideas back and forth. And it's like this giant, like, hologram of some beautiful god, like, appears over your head when you're talking. It's like this light, you know what I mean? And that's, you know, I think it's so much so that you can have conversations with people that are real conversations and people will fucking listen to them. Yeah. Like, how many times, like, when you go to a coffee shop and you're writing or whatever, do you like, please, I don't want to fucking hear you talking to the people next to you.
Sure.
But if you have a real conversation, people fucking pay to listen to it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Too bad they don't have glory holes for conversation.
Yeah, just like a little hole you put your mouth through and whisper through.
Just talk and you don't really have to know the person. Yeah. You just, like, go deep.
Huh. You that's actually kind of a weird, amazing idea. I don't know how you would develop that, but
I don't know. I guess you could just randomly call people or something, but it's not going to happen. But this idea, like what you said, during a great conversation and this other thing comes into the room or this other thing emerges.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that because you are... what's the word for someone who follows...
So it's an anthroposophist.
You're an anthroposophist.
Yeah.
And this is the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner.
Yes.
And so I've read some cursory stuff about it on Wikipedia, but can you kind of summarize it? Is it too complicated?
It's really difficult to summarize, but I can talk about it a little bit for sure. So Rudolf Steiner was this late 19th, early 20th century scientist, philosopher, and mystic. And... he developed a lot of his ideas. A lot of them sort of dovetail with theosophy, but he was never really a theosophist, even though he was a member for a while. He had his own set of beliefs that sort of blended with theirs. And basically... okay, so I'll just tell you the key components of the philosophy, okay. Right? And I won't go over them in detail, but one is that... One is that thoughts are as real as objects. So our thinking is as important as the physical world and, in fact, is as real as the physical world. It's real in a different way, but one is that human consciousness has evolved over time. So not just what we thought, but our way of thinking, our structure of perception has completely changed over time. And one is that there's spiritual realities with spiritual beings in them. So it, like all the... angels and demon stuff, that's all real.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of a whim. And then finally, it's a more, and this more than anything else, it's about freedom and compassion. It's about finding your own freedom and being compassionate for other people as they try to find theirs. And it's had all sorts of practical implications. Like, he's the guy that's responsible for Waldorf schools, for biodynamic farming, so if you've ever had biodynamic wine, and for he's really linked to community shared agriculture. He came up with a system of beekeeping, of architecture, et cetera, et cetera.
How would he define freedom?
This is really good, right? And this has really informed my whole sort of moral and ethical structure in my life, which is that it's thinking, it's like thinking clearly, acting with purpose, and feeling with sort of purity and love. So, in other words, most of our lives we're not free. And he says this really cool thing where we're not free, we're on our way to becoming free. So that resolves this whole like free world determinism thing, like just in this one sentence.
That's
it's so cool.
Cool,
right? And so like everything in our lives, our culture, our where we grew up, our families, our race, that's all pulling on us to not be free. And in fact, all of history is sort of tugging at us to not be free because it's led up to this moment. But every once in a while, and I'm sure you've had these moments, you rise up above that and you create a free act. And it's those times when you feel like, I really know what I'm doing. I've really worked to think this. I've really worked to do this. And that's in your life. Now, he's a little more refined than I'm talking about. There are very specific ideas about the thinking and feeling and willing or action that... you know, so some anthroposophists will hear this and be like, no, that's not it. But that's basically it. Yeah,
it's like a buoyancy or something where you kind of rise above the sluggish waters of the trance state. And it kind of reminds me of those moments where you realize that the world isn't boring. You've just sort of crystallized this boring shell around this very exciting, beautiful place. And those moments when that shell peels back, and suddenly you realize, oh, holy shit, this is incredible. This place I'm in is incredible.
Right. It's really interesting too, because I was just reading a lecture. He gave like 3,000 lectures, right? It's just crazy. And one of his lectures, he's talking about the difference between Buddha and Paul, right?
Cool.
And he is saying like, well, one of the differences is that the Buddha was saying that the world is an illusion, and so we have to overcome the illusory nature of it. And so all of material is just an illusion. And he says, well, but the difference between that and the Christian stuff, because it's deeply Christian, actually, but in a way that's so far from fundamentalist Christian.
Sure.
You know, that he's like, well, but Paul would say that it is an illusion, but only because we've turned it into an illusion through our knowledge. So we can see through to the real thing. So we're not meant to just merely overcome it, but to overcome our system of knowledge so we can see how beautiful and amazing it is.
That's incredible. Yeah. And it's so hard to overcome that system of knowledge.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And not just hard. I think that hard is maybe the wrong word for it. I think a better word for it is it's terrifying.
Right.
Because people, there's this overload that happens when you start, when you put down those fucking bags, the goddamn perceptual bags you've been carrying around your whole life, you put down those bags for just a second. You just experiment with dropping the fucking bags of what you think you want and who you think you are and how you think you should live and all the stuff that you've been taught. And if you do it for this moment, all of a sudden you're in an alien universe. You're in a brand new
right.
universe. And that's terrifying. It's exhilarating, but for someone who wants to be lazy, it's not exactly the best situation to be in.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, as you were talking, like, all these, like, thoughts are popping up in my head as to how to respond. And, like, actually, there are all sorts of little things you can do in your life that will just start to bring you to that point. And one of them is just listening to other people. So think about how terrifying it is to really listen to another person. Like, when they're talking, to just settle down and not think about what you're going to say or how fucking... I don't mean this directed at you, but
yeah.
like how fucking funny you're going to be, like how yeah. witty your remark is going to be, how smart you're going to sound when you respond, like just listening and taking it in and then responding like to what has actually happened inside of you after that person has spoken. It's so difficult. And so even like in the littlest aspects of our life, that journey is terrifying. Like you said, it's so terrifying, like even to just speak, you know,
it's so fucking intimate.
Yeah.
That's what it is to listen to someone, when you really open yourself up to them and really hear what they're saying. It's a connection people don't necessarily want to make, you know, so they're always planning the next thing. I know exactly what you mean, man. Something with these podcasts, that the ones that I really like are the ones where I'm not doing that. The ones that I really like are the ones where I'm just like, you just really surrender to this vortex of happening, and then those tend to be really good. I know I've done a good podcast when I can't remember what we were talking about after it.
That's really funny. And you know what, the thing is, like, you don't have to remember to have it enter you and change you completely. Like, you remember it, I mean, you don't remember it, but it's already done some sort of work in you, and it continues to work afterward. I think that that's true.
Yeah Now right, that's it's almost like you've taken, when you come into contact with good information, it's almost like you've taken a medicine that is creating this transformation in your subconscious, and then you'll have a dream or some incredible realization that's a result of that. But it's like seeds.
Yeah, and totally. How powerful are you in the world when you're a healthy person? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you really have to make yourself vulnerable to become a healthy person and to like lead through that. Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit more. That's something I've been thinking about lately. I've been thinking about the necessity of opening your heart. And I've been thinking about that and thinking about personally how often I'm very closed off, and how fucking painful, like how personally I avoid, you don't want to get your feelings hurt. You know, you certainly do. What's the worst thing? What's the worst thing besides death? What's the worst thing?
Yeah, well, you would say
heartbreak.
Yeah, totally.
Fucking heartbreak.
Yeah, it's awful.
Man. Oh,
that's worse than death, actually. I think.
Yeah, it's so.
It lasts longer.
It lasts longer. You and you're amazing. I don't mean to get completely off track, but your amazing essay about being in an abusive relationship,
yeah.
and it really just summed it all up, because you were in an extreme abusive relationship where there was actual physical violence.
Yeah.
But so heartbreak sucks. So what do humans do? Humans avoid pain. That's what we try to do. Right. So we certainly try to avoid heartbreak. And how do you avoid heartbreak? You avoid heartbreak by closing your fucking heart, right, by shutting down completely. And I think a lot of us are wandering through the world right now in a state of being completely shut down.
Yeah. And it's unfortunately, like, I think this sounds so judgmental, and I don't mean it judgmentally, but it's a real form of cowardice to not, yes, have your heart broken, because not only are you not allowing yourself to love, but like when we become sad because someone's broken our heart and we've just really put it out there, it's like we're sharing the burden of the rest of the world. Like when we don't let ourselves suffer, like we're not carrying that cross with everybody, yeah, else. It's just so awful, like what we're denying the rest of the world. So we're just like, fuck you, you guys suffer, I'm gonna be fine, you know,
right.
And when you suffer, you automatically, you know, like from all the times that you've suffered, you have begun to understand other people so much better, and you can talk to them and you can sit with them and you can listen to them and you can feel their suffering more,
yeah.
But if you deny that, like, you end up just being a total asshole, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No empathy.
None.
Because how do you have empathy if you don't know? How can you have empathy if you've never felt it? So when someone, you know, it's very easy to like discard someone or be a shitty friend. Someone calls you up and you like don't give them your full time because you don't know what it's like to be lonely. And you don't know that maybe they're completely fucking lonely and need somebody to talk to really bad. And you're ignoring that. So you're a hard-hearted person. It sucks. Not you. Yeah. But I mean, you don't seem to be like that.
No, I mean, I am a total asshole.
No, you're not. But
I hung up on 5 friends before I got here. 3 of them had AIDS, and 1 of them had a dead dog. And the other one was, yeah, go ahead.
That sucks. Yeah, man. To hear you say that health is comes from vulnerability is really... That's a different way of thinking. I don't think that a lot of people think like that. I think people think health comes from a kind of Spartan, mentality, a kind of being tough in the world. And
yeah, well, it was definitely a lesson I learned. So I think one of the things I said about anthroposophy is that thoughts are as real as objects. So in this weird way, through anthroposophy, everything sort of flips when you die. So all your objects become ideas, and all your ideas in the afterworld become like objects. They become solid things. Totally crazy, right? So I found out that like a lot of what's outside of you reveals its truth in its opposite in your inner world. So let me give you an example.
Please.
When I was in college, there was this keep coming back to cruisy bathrooms, but there was this cruisy bathroom on my campus. The first 2 years of college, I went to this little school in Western Pennsylvania. So, and everybody would have sex in this place called Keith Hall, and guys would just go there and like they jerk off with each other, they blow each other right there. And we had nowhere to go. Like it was the middle of Pennsylvania. And,
yeah.
So everybody would talk about it. Like at the gay and lesbian meeting on campus, they'd be like, oh god, Keith Hall, that place is so dirty, it's so filthy. And I was like, man, I fucking saw you there like 2 days ago, right?
Yes.
So then I came across this thinker, her name was Amber Hollibaugh, and she was this sex worker who is now this great intellectual, right? She was a prostitute and I think a stripper too. And I heard her talk, and the thing she said was so intense for me. It changed my life. You know, sometimes someone will say something and it's like a weird enzyme, and suddenly like everything in your life just shifts into this new,
yep,
reality. And she said, wherever you have a secret, that's where you're vulnerable. And I remember thinking about that, and I was like, man, like if I just say the shit I'm doing, like I become strong. But first I have to sort of like prostrate myself. I have to make myself vulnerable with this secret. Like,
yes.
I put it out there where I was like, yeah, man, like I go to Keith Hall and I get my dick sucked all the time, you know?
Right.
And then suddenly people started talking about it. They could never make fun of me anymore. And I just sort of like lost it. Like I shed that awful skin of being afraid of it. Now, this is a totally separate thing. And I'm not saying one way or another whether having sex in a bathroom or a rest area is right or wrong. I'm just talking about my own development, because holding that secret was definitely wrong. And it definitely like made me weaker. And so
yeah,
I made myself vulnerable and I became strong through it.
Holding the secret is far worse.
Absolutely.
Than sucking a cock at a glory hole or getting a blowjob at a glory. Holding on to that shit, man. It's the worst. It's so painful to hold on to that stuff. And, you know, in comedy, it's similar, because you find that the secrets, that your deepest secrets, that's where the jokes are.
Oh, yeah, totally. I was thinking about that since starting to listen to your podcast like a while ago, I was just like, man, you know, one of the really amazing things about comics and what they've probably taught me about my life, like, you guys talk about sex more than anybody, right? Like, you talk about your dicks, like, you talk about your, like, I've heard, like, Louis C.K. talking about watching his daughter take a shit, like, you know, like, just crazy shit like that, and all that energy, it's just bound up, you know, it's like all bundled up and people laugh at it, right? And I think that that so I think that, like, when we laugh, it's like when you sort of when your body, like, when your me ascends to your eye, right? It's like when you notice the world. So, like, you know, like you're doing all this shit compulsively and being all bound up and secretive, and someone drags it out into the light and you can see yourself from above. And that's like the sound your body makes when you rise up. It's like, ha 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 ha.
You know, it goes like, cool.
Yeah. And so, like, I think that that's really amazing. Like, just that being open about bodies and sex and all that. Like, you guys do that more than anybody except porn stars, probably.
Well, yeah. No, there's a friend of mine was telling me there's an odd similarity between comedians and porn stars. And a lot of times comedians will be friends with porn stars just because there's some kind, there is that openness. That is what it is, because we're both have learned different sides of the importance of being courageously open and the dangers of not being courageously open. I think it's a goddamn carcinogenic, actually.
I think
the secrets are like probably like smoking. Having a bunch of secrets is probably like smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Right. What it does, totally.
Because your body's just always holding that thing in, and just you start feeling guilty and sad. Now, I want to talk about this idea of ideas being real things.
Yeah.
Now, because sometimes I think, when I have an idea, I quite often get the feeling that this is not my property, or this is just me tuning in on something rather than something that's inside of me. It feels like it's something outside of me, and some perceptual mechanism in me has identified some sort of structure.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, right? Like, so if there's this whole spiritual world and it's composed of ideas and meaning and stuff, it's like when you have an idea, I mean, when you have an idea, you're tuning into one of those beings that lives in that world, right? But since you're an individual, everybody's going to tune into it in a different way. It's going to be filtered through your individuality. So it will be partially yours because it's come through your lens, and partially not yours because it's this other thing entirely.
Now, you use the term being.
Yeah.
So he believes these ideas are alive.
Yeah, totally.
So these are living things. Yeah. These are and he called them angels or
angels are a specific type. sorry, I keep clearing my throat. Yeah, I just gave too many blowjobs on the way over.
Did you really?
No, I didn't. it is possible though. Like angels are a specific type of those beings. There are certain rules that they have that other ones don't have, but yeah.
So that's so fascinating. So then that gets us into the realm of the invocation to the muse that artists do, or the idea of prayer, or the idea of trying to communicate with these beings to allow themselves to come through you unobstructed.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think it's also just, again, it's like tuning in. So, like, it's like your person. So you know this, like, there's this Buddhist thing where they're like, you're not your thoughts, right?
Yes.
And that really mind fucks people, right? Because I might be able to say I'm not my body, but, like, to say I'm not my thoughts, like, fuck you. How am I supposed to, like, what am I, right? But there is a you that, there's an I that notices the thoughts. So what are the thoughts then? That's the interesting question to me, if you're not them. And that is what I would say. Every human being is like a location where these beings gather. Like, we're like their church or something. They enter into us and they all gather and talk. And that's what our thinking is. And our eye gets to sort of pick the ones and notice the ones that it wants at a certain time and then spit them out.
Wow. That means my brain is like a fucking movie. A movie theater next to a high school or something. It's just filled with assholes yapping.
Other total assholes in there. And then that's part of our job, is to find those assholes that are in us and give them love. And then they get to ascend into being something better.
So that's beautiful. That's great. Okay, we're going to cut to commercial. I want to talk more about how to give the asshole teenagers in the movie theater of our minds love to make them stop looking at their cell phones and fly into heaven. And we're back.
Hello.
Hello. So yeah, this idea of the negative thought forms. I don't know what the correct word for it is. I bet Steiner That's has fine. The right word for yeah. it. But the negative thought forms, the reoccurring thought patterns, loving them. Now, right. how the fuck do you love these things? How do you do it? How do you embrace these awful things that your mind's regurgitating?
You know, it's so weird because I can do it all right now, but for a really long time I couldn't. So, and I had this moment in my life where it sort of like flipped for me. But before that, like basically all I would do was just sort of fake it till I make it. You know what I mean? It's like you have anxiety and then you're just like, I know you. Like the first thing is to notice, right? Because that's what drags us down to everything, is not to notice our thinking, not to notice our actions, to just fucking do all kinds of crazy, awful stuff, think yeah. terrible things about people, say horrible things, and not even notice that we're doing it. And then, you know, when you begin to notice, it gives you a chance to just stop for 1 second. And then I would just be like, yeah, I see you. And you know what? Like, you're here for me. Thank you. And that's it. You know what I mean? Right. It's just even just saying thanks. You know, instead of being like, fuck you, why am I thinking this thought? Why am I thinking this thought? Because that's like, that's the weird reinforcer yeah. of all those horrible things. That, why am I thinking this thought? It gives them this horrible energy.
Yes, you know? Sure does. Yeah, that's the, yeah, that's definitely the juju behind those things. That definitely, it's like blowing up a balloon.
Right.
But, you know, but again, to get back to this idea of like loving yourself or it's the opposite of being a victim, for one. It definitely totally. Gives you this sudden, like, suddenly you are in control of this maelstrom that before was dragging you all over your subjective universe.
Right. And at first that can bring a lot of guilt, though, because when you stop being a victim, you can feel guilty, like, because you just feel responsible. So you have to sort of, like, navigate that. That's, like, the second stage. It's like, okay, I'm the one that needs to take control of all this stuff, but fuck, like, I'm responsible. And you gotta get through that, too. And you talk about that all the time, just, like, forgiving yourself. Because if you've done something bad, it's never... It usually, I mean, unless you're, like, Jeffrey Dahmer, it's never that bad, you know?
You know what? Even when you're Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right. But Jeffrey Dahmer would never, I don't think Jeffrey Dahmer or people like him would ever have the capacity or the capability to like sit down and notice. There are certain people I think that are truly evil, that know that they're doing something evil and they do it anyway. But most people, especially someone as compulsive and crazy as him, like he probably didn't even have the capacity to notice it.
He was just somebody he's like in a terrible ambient trance that's right. just chomping on people's hearts and he's gone. When you see him in interviews, he's probably super medicated, but he seems so incredibly shut down and shut off, and he was a beast. But this other type of people that you're talking about, that's an interesting group. I've just been reading a term for them called the Black Brotherhood, which is this group of people who are intentionally trying to disrupt the planet, intentionally trying to cause harm and intentionally trying to fuck shit up.
Right. Yeah. And I remember having like this conversation with this girl. I went to this school for like a year. I didn't like it, so I stopped, called CIIS. It's not an endorsement or to get down on it for anybody, but I really didn't like it there. And it was like very new agey. And I remember this one girl having this conversation with me. She's like, well, evil is just a wound. And I was like, yeah, but like, don't you think Hitler thought that thought? Like, don't you think Hitler knew that, like, he was wounded and decided to do bad shit anyway? Yeah. Like, some people, you know, have deep occult knowledge and spiritual knowledge, and they just continue to do it because they want to. And that's something completely different. I don't completely understand that. I don't know why. And I can't understand that mindset either. But for some reason, that's their way.
What's that verse in the Bible? It's something like, if you know... Like, there's this, like, if you're awake, if you can see, I can't remember, it's really good, though, but it's this thing where Christ was saying, like, some people are awake, like, some people know, and it's, like, so terrible if you know and you don't do anything about it. If you continue to, Ram Dass talks about this, he says that there's, like, he talks about something he calls phony holy, which is where people pretend to be really spiritual when they're just kind of like just trying to get laid or just trying to make some money or whatever. And then he talks about it. There's the other side of it, which is phony unholy, which
Totally.
That thing where people pretend that they don't, they're not aware of what's going on, and they're pretending to be much worse than they really are. That's where it gets fucked up.
Right. You know what? It's funny. Like, those are similar, not completely, but it's very similar to, Steiner has this conception of, there are three really important spiritual beings for our time. So there are just, there's so many of them, but there are three that are sort of like big players right now. And one of them is, and the names throw people off, but let's just say them anyway.
Yeah.
One of them is Lucifer. And Lucifer is sort of like, he's like, I say he, but he's like the new age spirit. Like, everything is energy, like everything's great, like all that. And it's this idea of like rising up off the ground and having no responsibility in the physical world. It's very San Francisco, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, like I killed my wife, but my therapist says like it's a really good part of my process, like that kind of bullshit, you know what I mean? And then on the other side, there's Ahriman. And Ahriman is like super scientific. Everything is material. Everything is like, you know, those, like, you talk about them too, like those assholes that are like, oh, you're in love? Well, you know that's only brain chemicals.
Yes.
You got 3 months before that goes away. So get and enjoy it while you can.
Like, yep.
It's that kind of thinking. Everything is in the details. You know, that it's also super New York-y, I think. Like,
sure.
Everything can be solved by technology. And then Christ is like the middle way. It's like I work these tensions between these two beings, and I try to, again, redeem both of them in my life. But these are sort of the big players, Ahriman especially. But the weird thing is, so it's not just an easy dichotomy because there's a third, but there's this other thing where they seek, Lucifer and Ahriman are constantly seeking each other. So you have these people that are like, yeah, I'm really spiritual. Or, okay, like a great example is like someone goes to church and, you know, they go and like they listen to the words of the Lord. And then, you know, when they leave, they go home in their SUV, they throw their fucking can out their window, they live this totally materialistic life, and they treat people like shit, but they are, they judge them based on religious principles.
Right.
Right. And so the religious principle, the reason why they went to church in the first place, is this Luciferic spiritual thing. Like, I want to be spiritual. So see, Lucifer's not all that bad. Any spiritual drive resides in that. But then they don't add any Christ in there. And so Ahriman just sort of like sneaks in like this magnet and makes them live this totally materialistic life, lives through their totally materialistic life. And then they, so you have this conjunction of these two beings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. And you don't have anything separating the two, or there, you don't, right, have that synthesis of the two.
Yeah.
And that synthesis, is that the crucifixion? Is that the idea, is that we're being crucified on these tensions, on these two polar opposites that are kind of, matter and antimatter, and that we're this state of being, because it's not necessarily this human state of being, man. This isn't necessarily a joyride, you know, that we are, right, kind of like we have been nailed onto this a type of crucifix, which is being this kind of Luciferian light, a higher vibrational thing that's been nailed to a fucking matter that's been, you know, we're stuck, yeah, here like butterflies on a fucking pin for a little while, and we're having to deal with that
and suffering, right?
Yeah.
I think that I definitely think that that's a really good way to look at it. I'm not sure. I mean, that's a really huge thought to think about, but I think that that's an awesome way to think about it too. Like, yeah, we're crucified on the tensions of these two beings, like sort, yeah, of stuck together, because it's a human being there. Like, Christ is like the human being on those crosses. So it's like, that's totally representative of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, right. And the, what's a cross? It's two planes, right? It's two planes intersecting. And then, yeah, you smack on that plane a fucking hippie and bang, that's right. You got life. That's us, man, wriggling, yeah, around on there. And like, that's something that always, it's really interesting to me. I don't know, I've these fundamentalists, they don't talk about that moment on the cross where Jesus said, Father, why have you forsaken me?
Right. Yeah.
They skip over that. What is that? That, when I was a kid, that always bugged me when I would read that, because it's like, wait, what? I thought that he was always taken care of, like,
right.
But yeah, that moment is like, at that very moment, it's almost like he was completely and absolutely alone.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, right? Like, that's that moment when he becomes fully human. Like, not even his death. He's like, because that's a moment that we experience now in our time more than ever, where it's like, where is God? Like, there isn't even a God. I'm experiencing this moment. Some people experience that moment, that why have you forsaken, that one question, for their entire lifetime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that's their way of living, is in that one pinpoint in the Bible.
But I want to talk to you about that, because your essay about time, you talked about this state where when you're noticing time, things, I'm trying to think of the exact way you put it, but when you notice time, things are real. Things seem real. Is that the way to put it? When there's, you were talking about this, that I'm going to post all your, if it's okay, I'm going to post links to all your essays.
Please,
on
yeah,
the, on
thank
the,
you.
So go check out his essay on time. It's brilliant. But it's this idea of time, you know, being faster when you're enjoying things, being slower when there's pain. And then the idea of when you're not noticing time, it's like, what is anything? When there's no time, what is anything? If matter becomes incredibly, feels like an illusion. Maybe I'm adding my own ideas.
No. This is, yeah.
So I was just in this hotel room in Detroit, and I don't know if it's because I'd been reading this Tibetan Buddhist book by Chogyam Trungpa, or if it was because I was in fucking Detroit and just super depressed, because Detroit is like not doing good. Yeah. But I'm sitting in the hotel room, man, and all of a sudden, it's the end of the tour, this two-week tour that I've been dreading and looking forward to but kind of nervous about, and it's over. And all the nerves I had before the tour were used. I realized, oh, that was pointless. And then I realized, wait, it's like the tour never happened. It's like there's no time. There's just this one moment. And then in that realization, everything seemed quite absurd. Everything seemed ridiculous and absurd. And in that moment, I felt really, really alone, man. Like I felt like this real sense of just absolute loneliness that I haven't experienced in a long time.
Yeah.
And that makes me think of that moment. You know?
Yeah. You know what that is? I think it's like, so, right. I totally know that feeling. It's like you go on vacation for a week and then you come home, and the minute you pull up into your driveway, it's fucking gone. Right.
Yeah.
Like all that feeling of vacation, but it's not actually gone. It's like you've taken all that time you spent in that other place and you directed it inward, right? And it's come inside yourself. Like all the things you saw, the people you talked to, they become this memory state, this state of emotion that you had, these thoughts that you had, these sensations, and they're all in you now. And that can feel very lonely at first, because it's like, man, there's no world. Like it's all in me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so that's why people talk about mindfulness. Like you have this present tense thing, and it's like, well, when you're mindful, time falls away. And the reason time falls away, people get so confused about this. I do too, of course. But time isn't this thing that is actually exists outside of us. It's just a state of mind. It's just a state of being. It's a state of like noticing different things. It's all kinds of different inner states. And so, yeah, you pull everything. So it's really cool when you're mindful, or when you had that moment, you're also showing yourself that this shit is an illusion. So that's one step. So now what do you do after that? Like, what do you do after you're lonely? That's a different question.
Jerk off.
Yeah.
Yeah, to totally. Porn.
Before and after.
You try to forget about it, you know? Like that's the and I'm half joking, but that's the, you know, ideally what you do is you have this like moment where you call out in the wilderness and you do, you know, that's this, the, you know, that great Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah, where it's like, it's a fucking scream, man. It's not a, it's not like a noble thing. It's like you're a child that's lost in a mall and you just start crying. And I think maybe that's when real spiritual life starts, is you're not praying because you are wanting something, and you're not praying out of some temporary sense of gratitude. You're praying because you're like, what the fuck,
right,
man? What the fuck? And that's why Abba is the name, in the Hebrew name that Christ, when it says, Father, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
The term is Abba, and Abba means daddy. It doesn't mean father, like this kind of thing. It's like, daddy!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know? But that's that state of screaming out to daddy can be nullified, or can at least be put off temporarily by going to YouPorn and like just you know, or all the various distractions that exist in the world.
Well, what would you do, like, if the material world appeared illusory to you for a minute? You would touch yourself. Of course, it makes sense. Like, like I'm still here.
Right.
Now you pinch yourself to make sure it's not a dream.
Yeah.
Like that's what you would do. You pinch yourself to reassure yourself that you're in the dream.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, you're right. You don't want to wake up. You don't want to wake up out of the dream, because you don't know, because that's death. You know, that's fucking death in a dream. When you realize you're in a dream, when you wake up, That's it. It's done. You died. It's over. Right. You're this thing now, but the thing you were in the dream, that's fucking death. And I've had dreams where I have been another person, where I've had different memories and been a completely different being. And then, boom, you wake up and you're like, oh.
Right. But you know what, man? Like, we need our sleep. You know what I mean? It's like you can't just keep going on without sleeping. You'll go fucking crazy. Right. So you need to constantly refuel yourself by touching yourself. Like,
yeah.
And I'm making a joke about that, too. But it's like... you know, I mean, everybody's at a different place with that. Like, so.
No, is this what this is? So that maybe this is what we are. This is just God taking a break from being infinitely aware. Is that what this is? We're just God having this like temporary vacation from the field of infinite awareness that comes from not being stuck in time. Is that what we are?
Yeah. Well, that's a Taoist thing too. Like, did I dream the butterfly or did the butterfly dream me? Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I hope not, because I like being an individual as well. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that might be true, but then there's that on one level, and then there's this other total level where it's like, no, I'm me, you know?
Well, for now. Yeah. We're definitely. Yeah. And I'm me too. And I know that's happening. It's just, there's a that state of you know, it's figuring out a way to like honestly overcome that forsaken sense of you know, this activity that I'm engaged in will eventually be assimilated into my internal mind state, and yeah. There will be one last moment when I'm laying on my deathbed or sitting in my mangled car, or looking down at my chest after someone shoots me in the fucking chest, or whatever it is, there will be this one moment, one last moment, which will be exactly that moment when you pulled into the driveway after your vacation. Only it's your whole fucking life.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think... Well, but the thing is, like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and... I wouldn't ask anybody to believe this, but it's my experience is that we get more than one shot. So now that doesn't mean me, Connor Beebe, gets this extra shot to be Connor Beebe again, but there's some essential aspect of myself that goes on. So, you know, you get to try again. So some people, their whole lifetime, like I said, is in that moment of why have you forsaken me? And then they die and they have a lifetime between death and rebirth. And then they're born again and they get to do something else. But yeah.
Well, so this is where we get this, and maybe this is like a difference between Steiner and why he likes to differentiate himself from Buddhist philosophy. Because in Buddhism, there is this, especially in this Chogyam Trungpa, man. You should. You know what? For being a guest on the podcast, I'm gonna send Amazon you a copy of a couple of these books. They're incredible. But he really breaks down reality from a Buddhist perspective, and he uses the example there's all these different levels, and I can't remember what they're called now in Tibetan Buddhism, but there's all these different levels. I'll quickly go through them. There's the human level, then there's the above the human level, there's heaven, and then I think there's one more above that too, but maybe it just stops at heaven. Then under the human level is the animal level. Under the animal level is something called the hell of hungry ghosts. Hmm. And under the hell of hungry ghosts is hell itself. And these are all like states that consciousness kind of moves through. And he compares it to the moment that we differentiate ourselves from the whole, we suddenly create form. And it reminds me of what you in that essay about time, man. It was so intense. You talk about like you talked about a point. You talked about the idea of the point, and the point is, God damn, you articulated so well. Do you remember what you said?
The archaic state of consciousness. Yeah, like everything's all in one. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then when the point becomes a curve, that's I guess when time starts is when the.
Or when the point becomes it's many levels past that, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able, my eyes started bleeding when I was reading that essay.
That was the intention.
Yeah.
To give everyone eye menstruation. Yeah.
So anyway, the Buddhist idea is this sense of like, yeah, maybe you do have another life, and maybe you have a million other lives and a million, billion, billion other lives, but still, you will always come to the point in time where you're pulling into the driveway after the vacation,
right,
and you realize that it was nothing. It was nothing. It was just purely nothing. It was just memory. It's just nothing. You are always brought back to that fucking point,
right,
on the cross. Because that's where we live. We live in that point, man. We are in that point. We are in that point of being separated from the Supreme and forced into being an individual.
So that's, yeah. So first of all, I have a question for you. Are you saying that that's like, we'll be brought back to that point all the time in every lifetime we live?
I'm saying that's, yeah, no matter what, you're always at that point as long as you are separate from the whole.
Right. So I don't agree with that. And part of that is because I think that that's where we're at this mode of human consciousness. Like it won't be like that forever. Like human consciousness changes so much and like in such dramatic and intense ways that like once something new starts happening to the structure of our consciousness, we'll experience something different. So maybe right now that's true. And maybe for the past like 1,000 years, that might be true. But if our conception of time completely changes, like that would be different.
Okay, right. Well, right. No, and that's right. Well, that's the second coming, right? That's the idea of the resurrection, right? You go through that moment as a humanity as a whole, as Christ on the cross gets extinguished in this miserable way, and then is reborn again as this some kind of triumphant and, you know, nirvanic bliss being.
Right. Well, and that's not even that, because then you have to go past that, right? Like Christ was a certain being for a certain time and we absorb whatever happened with him. And then there's shit after that, man. Like it doesn't stop. Like that's, you know, you've talked about Teilhard de Chardin before,
yes,
and that Omega point thing, like, man, there's shit after that too. Like, so it just goes, it just keeps going on and on.
Right.
I mean, but not only that, like the idea that all the ideas of time are based around our conception of material too. Like our way of seeing matter, it's like, well, here's stuff and it ages and stuff happen, like time happens to the stuff.
Right.
But what if we shift our thinking into just the happening instead of the stuff? Then we have something completely different.
Yeah.
So like if everything's just happening, then we have a different conception. And so that's actually a Steiner thing. And I, you know what, I bring lots of stuff into my life. It's not just Steiner, but he's my headquarters, right? So,
right.
But you have, Steiner says that Christ doesn't show up as a person again. He already showed up as a person. He doesn't show up as a person again. What happens is something called the reappearance of Christ in the etheric. So the etheric is like all the plant forces, all the forces of growing. It's like what makes us grow. It's what stops us from falling apart, like just through entropy, you know, through thermodynamics and stuff
sure.
like that. And it's like Christ sort of reappears in that aspect of us. And it's already happened. Like it's already started. And so once we start noticing that, and that's another way of saying, once we start noticing that shit is just happening, it's not material, it's just all this stuff that's blooming and growing constantly, then we reach that Christ state. And then once we do that, yeah, something else completely, we are in a new world.
New.
Yeah.
And who knows what that is? I mean, that is death. That's the death of wherever you're at now. That's like the
totally.
Extinction of where you're at right now, whatever
yeah.
it is. That's intense, man.
It's awesome.
That's why they call it is awesome. It is awesome. That's why they call it the singularity, because nothing comes out of it. That's it, you know?
Huh.
There's a, in the Hare Krishnas, not just the Hare Krishnas, but in Bhakti Yoga, Krishna, which represents... which means reservoir of all pleasure, the thing from which all wonder and beauty and everything emerges from, lives in a place called Vrindavan. And that name, from what I've heard, translates into the land of never returning, the land that once you go to, you never come back from.
That's so awesome.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. It's really cool, man. It's really cool.
I love that too, because it puts a little bit of, fear in it, and like without fear, like it's not, I mean, it's sort of like not worth it if you're not scared, right?
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like my imagination is so blown up, because when I was a little kid, I was so scared of monsters, like certain monsters, that I would lie in my bed fucking paralyzed, like imagining all the ways that they were going to come in and kill me. And that like blew up the edges of my imagination. It became so huge, because every night I had this like battle with them, you know, like every single evening. And so like I think that being afraid has made me such an amazing, like, or has made such amazing differences in my imagination.
Well, it makes you a hero, right? I mean, if you're not afraid, what's the big deal?
Right, who cares?
Yeah, the, you know, yeah. There'd be no New Testament if Jesus was on the cross and was like, this doesn't hurt at all.
Right, he'd just be like some past, he'd be like Daria, you know, yeah. You guys, what are you doing?
Yeah. What are you, really? Yeah.
No, I'm not pinned here, I'm just shrugging.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not dying, I'm just bored.
Yeah. Meh. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Awful.
Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. You'd be like an awful internet blog commenter.
I'm out of here. Yeah. TTYN humanity.
TTYN. And on the cross, it would say LOL.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we wrap this thing up, I gotta talk to you about something very important.
Okay.
And it's not about the high spiritual stuff, and it's not about porn.
Oh, okay. Wow.
What's your workout schedule, man? I got to get a gay porn star's body. How do you do it?
Well, I don't have a gay porn star's body first, but one of the things, like, I always wanted to be in porn, like, for so long in my life, but I also sort of made this conscious effort to, well, not conscious, lack of effort to not be, like, this giant, jacked, chiseled, buff guy, right?
Yeah.
So, like, can see on a good day, I can see my abs. On a bad day, I can't. You know, I don't have giant pecs or whatever, so it's like, you know, cause I was like, that's over, man. Like, that's 1990s, like, people going to Starbucks,
no.
Everybody wanting the same uniform bullshit thing, like, constantly. People don't want that anymore. I'm just going to try to be myself and be fit. So, really, it's a lot of it has to do with food more than exercise,
God,
man.
Damn
it. I know.
I knew
sucks.
You were going to say
it
that.
It sucks, right? And also stress and sleep.
What kind of food? What do you do? What do you just eat? Salads? What's the idea? What
no,
do you do?
No.
Cabbage? And what do you eat?
No, I eat well. I mean, I give myself one day a week to eat whatever the fuck I want, right? So you just do that. But on those days, I still don't usually eat gluten. I try not to.
So gluten, is that what's puffing everybody up?
I think it's pretty bad. I mean, not everybody. For me, it's made a big difference, and I don't really eat sugar most of the week. I don't really even eat fruit mostly. I'll eat like raspberries or something like
that.
What
about Diet Coke?
No, man, you know that shit is like bacteria waste product is what sweetens Diet Coke. Like, the whole thing is just fucking gross.
What do you drink for soda?
I don't drink soda.
Get out of my house!
I'm leaving now.
What about soda water? That's okay.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think carbonation is probably not the best for your digestive system. Let's face it, folks. Let's get real here.
Yeah. Yeah. Wake up, people.
So it's killing people. No, I just don't think it's that good. I mean, I think just eat real food. Like, that's the real, like, and I think people should do that whether they want to be fit or not. Like, man, save so much fucking money, you know, going to the doctor and everything. Like, eat real food. Don't eat fucking processed bullshit. And
you don't eat protein bars? Sorry, neighbor's dragon.
He's dragging his recycling.
Yeah.
How dare, doesn't he know?
Doesn't he understand? I need a sign out there.
Mystical orgy. So I don't eat salad. I eat salad, sure. I eat like meat from animals that haven't been tortured, basically. I was vegetarian for 20 years, and so then when I switched, I was like, I can switch, but I'm not going to eat anything that's like been like treated like shit its whole life and like couldn't turn around and was like eating its own puke and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I eat good meat and I eat vegetables. I eat some fruit. I don't really eat almost any grains. Yeah. I can see the look on your face. It's like, what
no,
would I do?
No, I'm just assimilating it, man. No, I like that. I'm just thinking about it. I know it's food. Like, I know it's food. It just sucks because that's the hardest.
Well, what do you eat that's like so like, what's the thing that you constantly do besides soda?
Beer.
Beer?
Beer's killing me, man. Beer.
Yeah.
Beer, I drink too much beer. So, like, not, like, at alcoholic levels, but, I mean, I did just on the road for 2 weeks. I just drank beer every night, and I paid dearly for it, man. Now it's, like, any... Because I've been working out nonstop every day, running, and now it's, like... It's all gone. Now I've just got asymmetrical love handles and this weird sad thing rising up above my jeans. It's fucked up.
So here's the weird thing. Like, I was at a bar once and I was drinking like a Corona or something, and I'm like talking to people, yucking it up. I'm at like some gay bar, and like, I'm like, you know, in the middle of a sentence, and I like look over and there's this weird like stranger in my hand, and I was like, why the fuck am I drinking this? Like, yeah. I just came here to talk to these people and maybe get laid or whatever. Like, right. Why am I holding this Corona? So I just put it down, and I almost never drink now, maybe like once or twice a month at the most.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. Like, it slows down your metabolism. And do you honestly like feel good when you drink it? Do you like the taste of it?
Yes.
Okay.
I like the taste of beer, but I mean, I like carbonation.
Oh.
It's just stupid. But it's, no, I agree with you, man. I think it's a really, it's like of all the drugs, it certainly is one of the lowest level drugs. I mean, it's better to get blasted on ecstasy or, you know,
yeah, what's it going to do for you?
Weed. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So there's the answer to that. You've solved a big problem for me. Man, this has been awesome. Or do you come in town a lot?
Yeah, well, I used to come a little bit more, but I'm sure I'll be back soon.
We must do this again.
Yeah,
it's
totally
incredible. And please tell everyone how they can find you.
Okay, so you can follow me on Twitter. I tweet a lot. I know like you've gone on tirades about tweeting a lot, but I love talking to people that I don't know too. So it's just at Connor Habib, and it's CONNER, not OR, which a lot of people do, HABIB. And then I have my blog is connorhabib.wordpress.com. I have an adult site if you want to check that out.
I've seen it.
Okay, good. Yeah, how was it for you?
It's fucking intense, man. Yeah.
So that's connorhabib.com, but that's, you know, I wouldn't check that out in the presence of your family members unless
you
want to. NSFW. NSFW, totally. And let's see, what else? I have a... I'm actually working on a podcast in conjunction with this online journal called Wild River Review. So that'll be up and going soon. And
whatever. I'll tweet that, you guys. If you're not following him, I'll tweet it. So just let me know and I'll tweet it when your podcast comes out.
That sounds good. When's this going to be on, by the way?
This is actually probably going to be up this evening. I've got to get one up this week. So it's going to go quick. Like right after you leave, I'm going to start editing it.
Okay, fuck. Well, I was going to like try and improve my website real quickly before people went to it. But I can go ahead.
Okay, cool.
Just do it, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Your website's fine. It'll be fine. Yeah, and I'll post all your essays on DuncanTrussell.com. So thank you very much for
awesome. This is so great. And thank you, seriously. I mean, you've like made my life better. You've re-enlivened me. It's like every time I listen to you, it's like this lightning bolt of energy, like when I listen to you. So, I mean, it's just an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for saying so. It's an honor to have you. You're the best. Thank you, sir. Thanks for listening, you guys. If you enjoyed that podcast, why not go to iTunes and give us a nice review? It helps our ranking. Now enjoy Starman by David Bowie from the album Ziggy Stardust, one of my favorite albums of all time.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. Loud sounds, it seemed to fight. Came back like a slow voice on a wave of fight. That weren't no DJ, that was Hazy Cosmic Time. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a
Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.